Hello, Sun Sounds listeners. This is Michael Shannon, your volunteer reader. I'm going to read the major news articles from the Monday, June 30th, 2025 edition of Tucson's Arizona Daily Star. Before we begin with the headline articles, let's find out what kind of weather is in store for us. Today's weather: sunshine and a few afternoon clouds, highs near 110 degrees Fahrenheit, winds north, northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight's forecast: partly cloudy skies, lows to 83 degrees Fahrenheit, winds east-southeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour. And tomorrow's forecast predicts sunny along with a few afternoon clouds. A stray shower or thunderstorm is possible. Highs 104 degrees Fahrenheit, winds southeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour. We'll begin with the reading of the first article in the Arizona Daily Star front page titled, UA Grant Losses Add Up. This article was written by Purana Sanapanabar of the Arizona Daily Star. The University of Arizona has had a total of 67 research grants stopped or terminated by federal agencies under the Trump administration, an administrator told faculty senators. Of those, 26 research proposals received support from the university's Bridge Funding Program, which was created this year to cover gaps for unfinished projects that lose federal funds. The bridge funding provided so far by UA totals over $1 million, UA Secretary of the Faculty Katie Zeidels wrote in an email Thursday to senators on behalf of the Office of Research and Partnerships, OORP. Approximately 81% of all submitted proposals have received funding, said Zeidels, who is part of ORP's advisory committee and on shared governance leaders' behalf. Those not funded either did not meet eligibility criteria or need to be resubmitted by faculty through their colleges rather than directly to the office, she wrote. Zeidels said the 67 terminated research awards totaled roughly $60 million in lost unspent federal funds. The number is a drop from previous figures, she said, as 31 grants totaling about $5 million were reinstated or restored due to legal actions in the last few months. Zeidels also addressed the indirect cost rates research grants received to cover facilities and administrative costs, which has been threatened to be capped at 15% by the National Institutes of Health and the National Science Foundation in the last 6 months. She said that while the proposed caps have not been implemented due to legal challenges, the long-term outlook remains uncertain. In response, she said, a group convened by the Association of Public and Land Grant Universities, APLU, has been developing new models for a more transparent and efficient approach to indirect cost recovery on federal grants, said Zeidels. The two proposed frameworks are one that allocates a fixed percentage of total costs to research operations and facilities based on the type of institution and research, and another that redefines traditional indirect costs and reallocates them into direct cost categories. Neither model has been adopted by the federal government or the UA, and the APLU group is currently testing them at different institutions to provide a recommendation to the U.S. Office of Management and Budget in July, said Zeidels. It has not addressed potential cost savings, she said. The UA will also create a working group focused on this topic, and Zeidels invited volunteers to join. The group will consist of research active faculty and will provide input and recommendations to administrators and shared governance bodies. While Zeidels' email to faculty senators came out this week, UA spokesperson Mitch Zack and Tomas Diaz de la Rubia, Senior Vice President for Research and Innovation, declined to provide the most recent list of terminated grants and their federal funding agencies. However, the Star obtained a list in May compiled by the UA administrator that said of the 67 grants terminated or put under stop work orders, the highest number were funded by the National Science Foundation, 11, and the National Endowment for the Humanities, 10, and the Centers for the Disease Control and Prevention, 7. Zack and Diaz de la Rubio also would not answer the Arizona Daily Star's questions on how many people and positions at the UA have been affected due to the terminations. At the June 12th Arizona Board of Regents meeting, Diaz de la Rubia praised the UA's bridge funding program and the national attention it has gotten. He also said that the UA has been able to support every graduate student and faculty member who has asked for the funds. However, his presentation lacked detailed on the amount of bridge funds, the number of research projects it's been able to save, and future plans on how to keep the program going. He and Zach also declined to provide that information when the Star asked follow-up questions. One of the programs that received a stop work order was the Arizona Perinatal and Pediatric Psychiatry Access Lines, known as APAL, a program in the UA's College of Medicine, Tucson's Psychiatry Department. Sahira Kalia, director of APAL and a perinatal psychiatrist, told the Star in May it was stunning to get the email with the stop work order. The order was dated March 26, but the first paragraph of the email said, "Stop work immediately as of March 24th. She said she wondered how she was retroactively stopped to stop work. The program was funded by Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, or AHCCCS, under the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. APL's consultation services reached 75% in the state's counties and were totally grant-funded and free to clients. The perinatal program was started in June 2023 and was in its second year with $800,000 in funds. The pediatric portion was started in May 2024 and was in its pilot funding of $1.9 million that was to last over a year and a half. It's really hard to come up with that kind of money with no notice to keep the programs going," Kalia said. "We're talking about 16,000 moms in Arizona that are affected with perinatal mood and anxiety disorders," said Kalia. "Without the program, mothers now will have to pay $700 per appointment elsewhere," she said. "It's just too many moms that get untreated, and it's too many moms that die because of this. These are moms that are going to die. We're going to see an increase in death toll because of maternal health issues in Arizona if things like APAL and AHCCCS get cut," Kalia said. Kalia said an average of inpatient psychiatric hospitalization costs of $12,000 and that a lot of calls they get for consultation are from the rural parts of Arizona. "People call and talk about a mother they know who is psychotic, severely depressed, or suicidal," she said. "In such cases, the program provided expert guidance right away for no cost, and while it doesn't make money, it saves money," Kalia said. During the May 8th interview with the Star, Kalia said the program had applied for the UA's bridge funding a month before but had not heard back. Megan Stoltz, a clinical navigator with the program, did not respond to the Star's follow-up questions in June about an update on the bridge funds. Christine Dunkel, a professor of science education in UA's College of Education, said one of her two NSF grants received a termination notice April 25th. It focused on pushing back on racial inequality in STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, education in New Orleans, Louisiana. Awarded in September 2024, the grant's total funding over 4 years would have been approximately $2.5 million across the UA and three other institutions, Gunkel said. The UA portion was over $527,000 for 4 years. "Our project would have focused on addressing some of the disproportionate negative impacts of stormwater flooding on marginalized communities in New Orleans. The goal was to create a community-informed, justice-centered science curriculum for grades 3 to 8 that responded to children's experiences and concerns with stormwater flooding in New Orleans," wrote Gunkel to the Star. "It is important to note that 2025 is the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, which had devastating and long-lasting impacts on the Black community in New Orleans," she continued. "Research conducted by the project would have contributed to knowledge about how to engage in justice-centered science education and rebuild relationships across schools and communities. Gunkel's project was peer-reviewed 3 times and found to meet NSF goals when it was awarded. However, NSF changed its priorities to exclude diversity and inclusion on April 18, 2025, enabling it to claim the project no longer met agency priorities, she said. A major impact of these terminations is the emotional gut punch of losing a project we worked for over 3 years to win, said Gunkel. The project went through 3 rounds of peer review over 3 years to meet the equity, diversity, and justice requirement set by NSF, and then have NSF tell us that the project no longer meets their priority was crushing. She said her grant was not eligible for UA's bridge funds since there was no other funding opportunity to bridge to. Bridge funding is intended as temporary financing, provided until regular long-term financing is secured. The grant termination did not lead to any layoffs per se, since the grant funded Gunkel, a tenured UA faculty member, and 1 graduate research assistant who hadn't been hired yet. However, the loss of this funding impacts the 16 teachers and approximately 640 students who would have participated in the project, said Gunkel. It also represents a setback in developing equitable science learning opportunities for all students. Carletta Chief, director of the UA Indigenous Resilience Center and a professor in environmental science, talked about 3 terminated grants in the Resilience Center with more than $1.17 million. They were funded by NSF and the Environmental Protection Agency, and the center is now seeking donations and philanthropic support. One of the grants, in partnership with the University of Berkeley, California, worked to build pathways for Indigenous students in STEM fields. A second focused on providing tribal communities with free technical assistance to secure environmental justice funding. The third, in partnership with Arizona State University, aimed to integrate Indigenous knowledge to geoscience, education, and interpretation at Grand Canyon National Park. Cutting the grant related to STEM led to 8 layoffs at the UA, including 3 staff members, 3 students, and 2 postdoctoral scholars. Loss of the grant related to environmental justice funding led to 1 layoff. Indigenous communities are on the front lines of climate change, facing environmental, social, and economic challenges that threaten their ways of life, said the center's document calling for philanthropic supporters to step in. All 3 grants were considered for UA bridge funds. Chief said the grant related to STEM education received $80,000 for 6 months to support students and finish out the remaining activities that were suddenly halted. The next front page article is titled CBO. GOP Senate tax bill would add $3.3 trillion to debt. This article was written by Fatima Hussein, Lisa Mascaro, Kevin Freaking, and Joey Capelletti of the Associated Press, Dateline Washington. Hours before a tumultuous near-midnight vote on President Donald Trump's package of tax breaks, spending cuts, and increased deportation money, a Republican senator stood on the chamber floor and implored the plan's critics read the bill. After the dramatic 51-49 roll call last Saturday, Senate Democrats did exactly that. Unable to stop the march towards passage of the 940-page bill by Trump's 4th of July deadline, the minority party in Congress is using the tools at its disposal to delay and drag out the process. If Senate Republicans won't tell the American people what's in this bill, then Democrats are going to force this chamber to read it from start to finish, said Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer. By Sunday mid-afternoon, some 16 hours later, the clerk's reading of the nearly foot-high bill was done. And within moments, the Senate launched debate, but it's still going to be a while, with at least 10 hours of speeches stretching into the night. The slow-walking tactic points to difficult days ahead. It's taken a while to get here, said Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, the Budget Committee chairman, but will have a debate worthy of this great country. Republicans who have control of the House and Senate are closer to passing Trump's signature domestic policy package, yet there is political unease. Democratic lawmakers immediately launched fresh challenges against it, decrying the way they say Republicans are hiding the true costs by using unusual budgeting. A new analysis from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office Sunday estimates the Senate bill would increase the deficit by nearly $3.3 trillion from 2025 to 2034, a nearly $1 trillion increase over the House-passed bill. It also found that 11.8 million more Americans would become uninsured by 2034 if the bill became law, more than with the House approach. Republican holdouts remain reluctant to give their votes, and their leaders have almost no room to spare, given their narrow majorities. Essentially, they can afford three dissenters in the Senate with its 53-47 GOP edge, and about as many in the House if all members are present and voting. House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana, sent his colleagues home for the weekend. Trump, who has at times allowed wiggle room in his deadline, kept the pressure on lawmakers to finish. But the tense seed, as voting came to a standstill for more than 3 hours Saturday, might let the internal discord play out in public. In the end, Republican Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina and Rand Paul of Kentucky opposed the motion to move ahead, joining all 47 Democrats, Trump noticed. He threatened to campaign against Tillis, who was worried that Medicaid cuts would leave many without health care in his state. Trump badgered Tillis again on Sunday morning, saying the senator has hurt the great people of North Carolina. Later Sunday, Tillis issued a lengthy statement announcing he would not seek re-election in 2026. Republicans are using their majorities to push aside Democratic opposition, but have run into a series of political and policy setbacks. Not all GOP lawmakers are on board with proposals to reduce spending on Medicaid, food stamps, and other programs as a way to help cover the costs of extending some $3.8 trillion in Trump tax breaks. Renewed pressure to oppose the bill came from Elon Musk, who criticized it is utterly insane and destructive. If the Senate is able to pass the package in the days ahead, the bill would return to the House for final round of votes before it could reach the White House. At its core, the legislation would make permanent many of the tax breaks from Trump's first term that would otherwise expire by year's end if Congress fails to act, resulting in a potential tax increase on Americans. The bill would add new breaks, including no taxes on tips, and commit $350 billion to national security, including for Trump's mass deportation agenda. But the cutbacks on Medicaid, food stamps, and green energy investments are also causing dissent within GOP ranks. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, said the environmental rollbacks would amount to a death sentence for America's wind and solar industries. The Republicans are relying on the reductions to offset the lost tax revenues, but some lawmakers say the cuts go too far, particularly for people receiving health care through Medicaid. Meanwhile, conservatives worried about the nation's debt are pushing for steeper cuts. Using congressional process called budget reconciliation, the Republicans can muscle the bill through a simple majority vote in the Senate rather than the typical 6-0 vote threshold needed to overcome objections. Without the filibuster, Democrats and the minority have to latch onto another tool to mount their objections. One is the full reading of the bill text, which has been done in past situations. Senator Ron Johnson, a Republican of Wisconsin, forced a 2021 reading of a COVID relief package. Democrats also intend to use their full 10 hours of available debate time. And then Democrats are prepared to propose dozens of amendments to the package that would be considered in an all-night voting session or all day depending on the hour. As Saturday's vote tally teetered, attention turned to Senator Lisa Murkowski, a Republican of Alaska, who was surrounded by GOP leaders in intense conversation, she voted yes. Several provisions in the package are designed for her state. A short time later, Majority Leader John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, Drew Holdsatz, Senator Rick Scott of Florida, Mike Lee of Utah, and Cynthia Lummings of Wyoming to his office. Vice President J.D. Vance joined in. The talks dragged on. Then Vance led them all back in to vote. Later, Scott said he had met with the president, adding, "We all want to get to yes." Our next front page article is titled, "Hurricane Forecasting Data to be Discontinued." This article was written by Alexa St. John of the Associated Press. Weather experts are warning that hurricane forecasts will be severely hampered by the upcoming cutoff of key data from U.S. Department of Defense satellites, the latest Trump administration move with potential consequences for the quality of forecasting. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said it will discontinue the ingest, processing, and distribution of data collected by three weather satellites that the agency jointly runs with the Defense Department. The data is used by scientists, researchers, and forecasters, including at the National Hurricane Center. It wasn't immediately clear why the government planned to cut off the Defense Meteorological Satellite Program's microwave data by Monday. The Defense Department referred questions to the Air Force, which referred them to the Navy, which did not immediately provide comment. NOAA spokesperson Kim Doster, in a statement, called it a routine process of data rotation and replacement, and said the remaining data sources are fully capable of providing a complete set of cutting-edge data and models that ensure the gold standard weather forecasting the American people deserve. Traditional visible or infrared satellites provide data that becomes images showing the structure, intensity, and temperature of a storm according to NOAA information, along with features such as lightning. However, those miss the three-dimensional details of a storm. The microwave data gives critical information that can't be gleaned from the conventional satellites, and helps peer under a regular image of a hurricane or tropical cyclone to see what is going on inside of it. It's especially helpful at night. The news is especially noteworthy during the ongoing hurricane season and as lesser storms become more frequent, deadly and costly as the burning of fossil fuels worsens climate change. Microwave imagery allows researchers and forecasters to see the center of the storm. Experts say that can help in detecting the rapid intensification of storms and in more accurately plotting the likely paths of dangerous weather. If a hurricane, let's say, is approaching the Gulf Coast, it's a day away from making landfall, it's nighttime. Union of Concerned Scientists fellow Mark Alessi said, "We will no longer be able to say, okay, this storm is definitely undergoing rapid intensification. We need to update our forecast to reflect that." Other microwave data will be available, but only about half as much, hurricane specialist Michael Lowry said in a blog post. He said that greatly increases the odds that forecasters will miss rapid intensification, underestimate intensity, or misplace the storm. That will severely impede and degrade hurricane forecasts for the season and beyond, affecting tens of millions of Americans who live along its hurricane-prone shorelines, he said. University of Miami hurricane researcher Brian McNulty called the loss of data alarmingly bad news in a post of the social media platform Blue Sky. "Microwave data are already relatively sparse, and so any loss, even gradual as satellites or instruments fail, is a big deal. But to abruptly end three active functioning satellites is insanity." NOAA and its National Weather Service office were the target of several cuts and changes in President Donald Trump's second term. The Department of Government Efficiency gutted the agency's workforce, local field offices, and funding. The next front page item is titled, "More Home Purchases Deals Fall Through." This article was written by Alex Viega of the Associated Press, Stateline, Los Angeles. The latest sign of trouble in the U.S. housing market, a pickup in front purchase agreements falling through before they're finalized. About 6% of pending contracts to buy a home were canceled in May, down from 7% in April, up from 5% in May last year, according to data from the National Association of Realtors. May is the third consecutive month with an annual increase in pending home sales cancellations. A separate analysis of housing data by Redfin found 14.6% of all pending sales in May fell out of contract, up from 14% in May last year, and the highest cancellation percentage for the month of May going back to at least 2017. The trend underscores how even home shoppers who manage to ink a deal with a seller can end up having to back out because of unexpected costs, changes in their credit, employment, or financial status, or a low appraisal, among other reasons. Stock market fluctuations, restrained consumer confidence, and broader economic and geopolitical uncertainties may be leading to higher than normal cancellation rates in recent months, said Lawrence Young, NAR's chief economist. The U.S. housing market remains in a sales slump going back to 2022, as elevated mortgage rates and rising home prices nationally keep pushing the cost of home ownership well beyond what many would-be home buyers can afford. While sales of previously occupied U.S. homes in May remained at the lowest pace since 2009, pending U.S. home sales rose 1.8% from the previous month and increased 1.1% from May last year, NAR said Thursday. A home sale is listed as pending when the purchase contract is signed, but the transaction has not closed. There's usually a month or two lag between a contract signing and when the sale is finalized, which makes pending home sales a bellwether for future completed home sales. A snapshot by Redfin of pending U.S. home sales for the 4 weeks that ended June 22nd shows they fell 2.3% from a year earlier, the biggest drop in 3 months. Economists at mortgage buyer Fannie Mae revised their outlook for existing U.S. home sales this past week, citing expectations that the average rate on a 30-year mortgage will end this year at 6.5%. Fannie Mae now expects existing U.S. home sales will rise 2% this year to 4.14 million. The Economist previously forecast a sale of 4.24 million homes. Still, they project home sales will jump 9.5% in 2026 on the back of mortgage rates easing to 6.1%. We'll now pause the broadcast reading for a reminder that you are listening to a broadcast reading of the Arizona Daily Star from Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Michael Shannon, and I'm a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. If you missed any part of this program, you can access it on demand anytime on our website, www.sunsounds.org, from the broadcast info and audio link. Sun Sounds is also available on your smart home device. Now we'll turn the page to the Tucson and Region section of the Arizona Daily Star for several important and informative articles there. First item up is titled, Drone Trending Over Fireworks. This article was written by Sierra Blazer of the Arizona Daily Star. A shift towards drone shows and away from fireworks displays is being seen across the country as communities announce their upcoming Independence Day celebrations. Suarita will mirror this change as it combines traditional fireworks with New Age drones in a Stars and Stripes celebration Friday evening. We're excited that we're not going to have to wrestle so much with property locations, fire restrictions, and fallout zones, said Suarita Parks and Recreation Director David Stelter. The decision for the switch was made in the fall of last year after struggling with where to put the fireworks last 4th of July. We did not have a good shot location, Stelter said. Last year, where we had our Stars and Stripes event was about a mile and a half from where we shot the fireworks, so we had a community that was frustrated with the show. As Suarita continues to develop and grow in population, Stelter said safe, clear locations have been harder to come by, fit for fireworks shows, and which begged the need for a new idea. We kind of circled the wagons just understanding the constraints we had, he said. This is the year we try to find that long-term solution, and I think this is going to be a fun change. This year's show will feature a drone display mounted pyrotechnic mounted to pyrotechnics, where small fireworks and sparklers will be attached to drones, and ground pyrotechnics, which are fireworks designed to function on the ground rather than be launched into the air. I think that's kind of exciting, and that's the temperature I've been getting from people as well, Stelter said. Usually, Suarita spends about $50,000 to $60,000 for this Stars and Stripes show. However, the change will save the town some money, as Stelter estimates this show will cost about $45,000. They're highly efficient, he said. We have great relationship with the company Open Sky Drone Productions, and to my understanding, we're the first organization to utilize their services and have a drone show in Southern Arizona for Fiesta Suarita in April of 2023. The event will take place at Animax Park, 1750 South Camino de las Quintas. However, the drones can be seen up to 3 miles away, Stalter said. Those who want to see the smaller fireworks display, however, will need to attend the event. Families can enjoy food trucks, the splash pad, and games starting at 5 p.m. The Stars and Stripes show will begin at 9 p.m. There is a 60% chance of rain Friday across Pima County, however, the show is still currently scheduled as planned. Fireworks shows in Pima County. City of Tucson's 4th of July celebration. A city will be launching fireworks from A Mountain for their 28th annual 4th of July celebration. On Friday, July 4th, parking lot opens at 7 p.m., fireworks at 9 p.m. It'll be held at the Tucson Convention Center's Westside parking lot, 260 South Church Avenue, and neighboring areas. Event page was not up at the time of publication. Another show will be held at Reed Park Zoo. Reed Park Zoo will be offering a special discount this 4th of July with free admission for active military, veterans, National Guard, and retired military members with military, VA, or retiree IDs. The event will occur at 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Friday, July 4th, where Reed Park Zoo at 3400 East Zoo Court. You can also take a trip up for cooler weather on Mount Lemmon and watch a performance by the Tucson Concert Band before catching fireworks later in the evening. The event will be at 10:45 a.m. to noon Friday, July 4th at Summer Haven Community Center on 12949 North Sabino Canyon. Also, for Oro Valley's July 4th celebration, keep the family entertained with live music, food trucks, a beer garden, kids' crafts, lawn games, and jumping castles in Oro Valley. The Oro Valley Aquatic Park will also have reduced admission rates from noon to 5 p.m. to celebrate the holiday. The event is on Thursday, July 4th. Events and activities start at 5 p.m. Fireworks start at 9 p.m. This will be held at the James D. Creek Park, 23 West Cali Concordia. Our next article from the Tucson and Region section of the Arizona Daily Star is titled, State Has Fewer Wrong-Way Crashes. This article was written by Eddie McCoven of Cronkite News. A recent string of wrong-way drivers and wrong-way crashes on Arizona freeways raises a key question. Has there been an uptick in these kinds of situations? In short, the answer is no. Even though there were more than 1,700 wrong-way drivers reported on Arizona freeways in 2024, Sergeant Eric Andrews with the Arizona Department of Public Safety says that figure does not reflect the number of crashes or deaths. When we look at any of our numbers, everything is trending down for the most part, some more than others, Andrews said. The collisions, and especially fatal collisions, is a very, very small percentage of the actual reported incidents. Arizona saw 1,740 reported wrong-way driver incidents in 2024 compared to the 1,979 incidents in 2019, according to data provided by DPS. The number of collisions caused by wrong-way drivers in 2024 was 59, up from 55 reported in 2019. In terms of deaths, 14 were reported in 2014, down from the 17 reported in 2019. Most of the wrong-way incidents happened between 11 p.m. and 4 a.m., according to Andrews. It's easier to get on the highway going the wrong way if there's no vehicles on the road to prevent you from doing so in the first place, he said. Driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol makes up the majority of the causes of wrong-way incidents, Andrew said, but there have also been cases with elderly drivers who are confused or drivers who were suffering from a mental health episode. Since 2018, the Arizona Department of Transportation has detected wrong-way drivers through the use of thermal cameras, which alert dispatch centers to call law enforcement and also trigger the overhead digital signs to warn drivers of a wrong-way driver approaching. Arizona was the first state in the nation to implement such a system. Andrew says this technology, combined with road sensors and 911 calls, contributes to the high number of incidents reported. Arizona's figures compare favorably to nearby states. Nevada saw 123 wrong-way crashes with 49 deaths last year, while Utah saw 313 wrong-way crashes and 12 deaths. Data for New Mexico was not immediately available. While crash data from California was not available, the state estimates that 43 people die each year in wrong-way crashes. Other states don't use the same technology as Arizona. Each state tracks data differently, meaning the true number of wrong-way incidents in neighboring states could be similar to Arizona in recent years. In addition to the camera and sensor technology, ADOT has also installed larger wrong-way signs at freeway on-ramps. But Doug Ninsel, spokesman for ADOT, says the efforts are not designed to prevent wrong-way drivers. While the larger wrong-way signage has helped drivers to self-correct, the camera system has helped to alert law enforcement in a timely manner rather than waiting on 911 calls, and has helped law enforcement to stop wrong-way vehicles before a crash happens, Ninsel said. We can't prevent someone from becoming a drunk driver and actually making that bad decision to be out there on the road and maybe entering a freeway in the wrong direction, Ninsel said. We don't see this as a prevention system as much as a system that is meant to reduce the risk and assist law enforcement. The next item from the Tucson and Region section of the Arizona Daily Star is titled RSV Shot Recommended for Babies. This article was written by Stephanie Innes of the Arizona Republic. While the newly configured federal vaccine panel is stoking controversy, at least one of its recent votes was expected to help the millions of U.S. infants and children, including thousands in Arizona, who get sick from RSV every season. The Federal Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices on June 25th recommended clesrovimab, a monoclonal antibody created by the New Jersey-based Merck Pharmaceutical Company, for use in infants younger than 8 months born during or entering their first RSV season. RSV stands for Respiratory Syncytial Virus. The federal panel's recommendation to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in favor of clesrovimab, also known as Eflonsia, is not a game changer because two other monoclonal antibodies products already exist to prevent RSV in infants. Nirsvimab, also known as Beyfortus, and Palivizumab, often known by its trade name Synagis. The positive recommendation for clesrovimab, which followed the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's approval of the shot on June 9th, is giving parents more options, providing more security to guard against drug shortages, adding more competition to the market, and also may serve as a reminder to families that a prevention for severe RSV infection exists, said Dr. Vasim Balan, who's Division Chief of Infectious Diseases at Phoenix Children's Hospital. It basically just broadens the options for protections, Balan said. At the end of the day, they both serve the same purpose, which is protecting the baby against RSV and specifically severe disease from RSV. Monoclonal antibody shots versus vaccines. Monoclonal antibody shots give people man-made proteins that mimic the antibodies that our bodies naturally produce and help fight infections. By contrast, an actual vaccine typically gives people a particle of virus so their own immune system can produce the antibodies to protect against it. Since the preventative effect of the same are as a vaccine, The monoclonal antibody shots to protect against RSV are often called vaccines, although that's technically not accurate. We call these products vaccine-like products. Biologically and scientifically, they are not the same as a vaccine, but they basically get us the same kind of purpose, which is protection against RSV, Ballen said. Bifortis, developed by the Swedish-British drug maker AstraZeneca in partnership with the French pharmaceutical company Sanofi, was introduced in 2023 as game-changing for infants since only one shot is needed, which was an improvement over Synagis, which requires monthly injections. Eflunzia, a Merck product the federal panel recommended June 25th, is like Bifortis, also a on-separ injection, once per season injection. Single-season injections simplify the process of protecting babies against the virus that is a leading cause of hospitalization among infants and routinely causes the death of 100 to 300 U.S. children under age 5 every season. Infants would only need Bifortis or Eflunzia to be protected, not both. Studies have already shown that Bifortis is preventing hospitalizations of infants for RSV, Ballen said. It all depends on making sure that the babies that are eligible for those dose of immunizations are getting it, Ballen said. That's why we're excited now that we have more options. Now it's time to flip the pages to the Nation and the World section of the Arizona Daily Star to check out several important news articles there. The first item is titled, Most Massive Airstrike. This article was written by Vladimir Yichuk of the Associated Press, Dateline Kiev, Ukraine. Russia launched its biggest aerial attack against Ukraine overnight, a Ukrainian official said Sunday, part of an escalating bombing campaign that has further dashed hopes for a breakthrough in efforts to end the three-year-old war. Russia fired a total of 537 aerial weapons at Ukraine, including 477 drones and decoys and 60 missiles, Ukraine's Air Force said. Of these, 249 were shot down and 226 were lost, likely having been electronically jammed. The onslaught was the most massive airstrike on the country since the beginning of Russia's full-scale invasion in February 2022, taking into account both drones and various types of missiles, Yuri Inat, head of communications for Ukraine's Air Force, told the Associated Press. The attack targeted several regions, including western Ukraine, far from the front line. Poland and allied countries scrambled aircraft to ensure the safety of Polish airspace, the country's Air Force said. Three people were killed in each of the drone strikes in the Kherson, Kharkiv, and the Petrovsk region, according to the three governors. Another person was killed by an airstrike in Kostyantynivka, local officials said. In addition to aerial attacks, a man died when Russian troops shelled the city of Kherson, and the body of a 7-year-old woman was found under the rubble of a 9-story building hit by Russian shelling in the Zaporizhzhia region. In the far west Lviv region, a large fire broke out at an industrial facility in the city of Drobivich, according following a drone attack that also cut electricity to parts of the city. Ukraine's Air Force said one of its F-16 warplanes supplied by its Western partners crashed after sustaining damage while shooting down air targets. The pilot died. Russia has recently been improving its drone technology as well as its tactics, striking Ukraine with increasing success. Russia's defense ministry said it had shot down 3 Ukrainian drones overnight. 2 people were wounded in another Ukrainian drone attack on the city of Bryansk in western Russia, regional governor Alexander Bogomaz said Sunday morning, adding that 7 more Ukrainian drones were shot down over the region. Meanwhile, Russia claimed Sunday that it took control of the village of Novokrinia in the partially Russian-occupied Donetsk region. In other developments, Russia's foreign intelligence chief, Sergei Naryshkin, said he spoke on the phone with his U.S. counterparts, CIA Director John Ratcliffe. I had a phone call with my American counterpart, and we reserved for each other the possibility to call at any time and discuss issues of interest to us. Nirokishkin said in remarks to the TV reporter Pavel Zaruban, who posted them on his Telegram channel on Sunday. The next item is titled, Trump Calls for Gaza Ceasefire. This article is written by Tia Goldenberg, Sammy Magdi, and Wafa Sharafa of the Associated Press, Dateline Tel Aviv, Israel. U.S. President Donald Trump on Sunday urged progress in ceasefire talks in the 20-month war in Gaza between Israel and Hamas. Though some weary Palestinians were skeptical about the chances, Israel issued a new mass evacuation order for parts of northern Gaza. Ron Dermer, a top advisor to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, was set to travel to Washington this week for talks on a ceasefire, the Israeli official said. And plans were being made for Netanyahu to travel there in the coming weeks, a sign there may be more movement on the deal. Netanyahu was meeting with the Security Cabinet on Sunday evening, the official said, on condition of anonymity to discuss plans that hadn't been finalized. Make the deal in Gaza. Get the hostages back, Trump wrote on social media early Sunday. Trump raised expectations Friday by saying there could be an agreement within the next week. An 8-week ceasefire was reached as Trump took office earlier this year, but Israel resumed war in March after trying to get Hamas to accept new terms on next steps. Since the beginning of the war, they have been promising us something like this. Release the hostages and we will stop the war, said one Palestinian, Abdel Hadi al-Aour. They did not stop the war. Israeli attacks continued. An airstrike Sunday evening hit a house sheltering displaced people in the Jabalia al-Nasla area, killing at least 15, according to Fares Awad, head of the Gaza's Health Ministry, Ambulance and Emergency Services in the territory's north. He said women and children made up over half the dead. During a visit to Israel's Internal Rescue Security Service, Shin Bet, Netanyahu said that the Israel-Iran war and ceasefire have opened many opportunities. First of all, to rescue the hostages, of course, we will also have to solve the Gaza issue to defeat Hamas, but I estimate that we will achieve both tasks. But talks between Israel and Hamas have repeatedly faltered over a major sticking point, whether the war should end as part of any ceasefire agreement. Hamas official Mahmoud Merwadi accused Netanyahu of stalling progress on a deal, saying on social media that the Israeli leader insists on a temporary agreement that would free just 10 of the hostages. About 50 hostages remain, with less than half believed to be alive. Netanyahu spokesperson Omar Dastri said that Hamas was the only obstacle to ending the war without addressing Merdawi's claim. Hamas said it is willing to free all the hostages in exchange for a full withdrawal of Israeli troops and an end to the war in Gaza. Israel rejects that offer, saying it will agree to end the war if Hamas surrenders, disarms, and goes into exile, something that the group has refused. The war in Gaza began with the Hamas-led attack on southern Israel on October 7, 2023, in which militants killed 1,200 people and took roughly 250 hostages. Our next article is titled, Key Witness Against Abrigo Garcia Won't Be Deported. This article was written by the Associated Press, Dateline Washington. Court records show that the Trump administration has agreed to spare from deportation a key witness in the federal prosecution of Kilmar Abrego Garcia in exchange for his cooperation in the case. Jose Ramon Hernandez Reyes, 38, was convicted of smuggling migrants and illegally re-entering the United States after having been deported. He also pleaded guilty to deadly conduct in connection with a separate incident where he drunkenly fired a gun in a Texas community. Records reviewed by the Washington Post show that Hernandez Reyes was released early from federal prison to a halfway house and was given permission to stay in the U.S. for at least a year. Prosecutors identify Hernandez Reyes as the first cooperator in the case against Abrego Garcia, according to court filings. The Department of Homeland Security maintains that Hernandez owned the SUV that Abrego Garcia allegedly used to smuggle migrants when the Tennessee Highway Patrol stopped them in 2022. Hernando Reyes is among a handful of cooperating witnesses that could help the administration deport Abrego Garcia. Abrego Garcia, a construction worker who was living in Maryland, became a flashpoint over Trump's hardline immigration policies when he was mistakenly deported to his native El Salvador in March. The administration returned him this month to face the smuggling charges, which his attorney called preposterous. Now, from the Digest feature of the Nation of the World section, we'll check out several short items of important news. First item is titled, Trump Not Planning to Extend Tariff Pause. Dateline Washington, President Donald Trump says he is not planning to extend a 90-day pause on tariffs in most nations beyond July 9th, when the negotiating period, he said, would expire. And his administration will notify countries that the trade penalties will take effect unless there are deals with the United States. Letters will start going out pretty soon before the approaching deadline, he said. We'll look at how a country treats us. Are they good? Are they not so good? Some countries we don't care. We'll just send a high number out, Trump told Fox News Channel's Sunday Morning Futures. The next item is titled, Senate Opposes Bill, Won't Seek Re-Election, Dateline Washington. Republican Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina said Sunday he will not seek re-election next year, a day after announcing his opposition to President Donald Trump's tax breaks and spending cuts package because of its reductions to health care programs. His decision will create a political opportunity for Democrats seeking to bolster their number in the 2026 midterm elections, opening a seat in a state that has long been a contested battleground. Foregoing a re-election campaign could make Tillis a wild card in a party where few lawmakers are willing to oppose Trump's agenda. Republicans hold a 53-47 edge in the Senate. Next item from Idaho. Authorities in western Idaho urged residents to shelter in place Sunday afternoon following a shooting in Kootenai County near Coeur d'Alene. Governor Brad Little said on the social platform X that multiple firefighters were attacked while responding to a blaze. At least two people were killed, officials said. Next item from Philadelphia. One person died and two others were injured after an explosion damaged several homes Sunday on Philadelphia's north side, according to authorities. Daniel McCarty, the Philadelphia Fire Department executive officer, said there was extensive damage to about five homes, including collapsed structures. Next item from Brazil. Former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro attended a public demonstration Sunday in Sao Paulo to protest against his ongoing Supreme Court trial in the South American country. Bolsonaro and 33 allies are accused of plotting to overturn the 2022 presidential election results and remain in power. Next, from Serbia. Thousands of people set up street blockades Sunday in Serbia, angry over the arrest of anti-government protesters who clashed with police at a massive rally a day earlier demanding early elections. Serbian media said similar protest blockades were organized in smaller cities in the Balkan country. Next item, from Southern Europe. Major heat waves across Southern Europe pushed temperatures above 104 degrees Fahrenheit in countries including Italy, Spain, and Greece, as local authorities issued fresh warnings against the risk of wildfires. Experts linked the rising frequency and intensity to these heat waves to climate change. Next item from Hong Kong. Hong Kong pro-democracy political party League of Social Democrats announced Sunday it disbanded due to immense political pressure, the latest casualty in years-long crackdown that has already quieted much of the city's once vocal opposition. We've reached the end of the Digest sections. All the articles from the Digest were compiled by the Associated Press. Now we'll head over to the Business section for a useful article in the Business section titled Manufacturing Help Wanted. This article reading is abridged due to time constraints. This article was written by Ferris Stockman of the New York Times. President Donald Trump's pledge to revive American manufacturing is running into the stubborn obstacle of demographic reality. The pool of blue-collar workers who are able and willing to perform tasks on a factory floor in the United States is shrinking. As baby boomers retire, few young people are lining up to take their place. About 400,000 manufacturing jobs are currently unfilled, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, a shortfall likely to grow if companies are forced to rely less on manufacturing overseas and build more factories in the United States, experts say. Difficulty attracting and retaining a quality workforce has been consistently cited as a top primary challenge by the United States manufacturer since 2017, said Victoria Bloom, the chief economist at the National Association of Manufacturers, which produces a quarterly survey. Only recently has the issue slipped down on the list of challenges, superseded by trade-related uncertainty due to the Trump administration's tariffs and by increased raw material costs, Bloom said. But the scarcity of skilled blue labor-collar workers remains a long-term problem, according to Ron Hetrick, an economist with Lightcast, a company that provides labor data to universities and industry. We spent three generations telling everybody that if they didn't go to college, they are a loser, he said. Now we're paying for it. We still need people to use their hands. The hiring challenges faced by U.S. factories are multifaceted. The president's crackdown on immigration, which includes attempts to revoke deportation protections for migrants from troubled countries, may eliminate workers who could have filled those jobs. Many Americans aren't interested in factory jobs because they often do not pay enough to lure workers away from service jobs that may have more flexible schedules or more comfortable working environment. Due to time constraints, we have reached the end of today's reading of the Arizona Daily Star, the Monday, June 30th, 2025 edition. For Sun Sounds of Arizona, this is Michael Shannon, your volunteer reader. Thank you very much for listening.